Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Live from the greatest city on the planet.
Yes, I'm going.
Soon to be named the wettest city on the planet.
Yes, I'm going.
Well, we need the rain.
Are you kidding me?
It's raining again.
Man, did you hear that last night?
Well, thunder was pretty significant.
1:30-ish?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Thunder, lightning, rain.
Mayhem, usual.
Might as well just move to Seattle, you know, if we're going to have this kind of weather.
Or England.
I don't know. It's got to end sometimes, doesn't it? Let's go live today. Dave, doesn't it have to end sometime?
You would think so. I'm a little concerned about the mosquitoes.
Yeah, what were the things that Lou Manfredini mentioned? Hockey pucks, mosquito pucks?
Donuts. What do you call them? I actually went and saw them.
At an Ace Hardware?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
At a hardware store?
Yes. And you put them in, like, if you have standing water anywhere, you toss them in there. They're like, they look like little donuts.
And then they dissolve.
I guess they dissolve.
And what they do is they break up the larva.
Yes.
Before the mosquitoes can be born. Right. You don't want larva.
Are they safe for pets? I can't remember.
Yeah, he did say they were.
I think he did say that, yeah.
I emptied my gutters yesterday, and it was like a flood. The gutters were stopped up with those little seeds that fall off the trees.
You have turned into like Mr. Handyman
with all
the stuff you're doing.
There was so much water in the gutters, it came out like a flood because the little seeds were stopped up. So that might be a good idea, too.
But that probably makes you feel good once you get that, right? Yeah, then you make this noise.
I do that every time I do work around the house.
Right? Man's man. Come on.
And then the big grates in the streets get all full of leaves. Got to go out there and clean those out, too.
Generally, stuff like that, I just wait till a neighbor does it. Then I go out and go, oh, man, I was just going to do that.
Yeah. That's what my husband usually does. He's the guy out there doing that.
Oh, he's the guy.
There's always one guy on the block. There's one guy on the block that always does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I go out and thank him.
What would you call that guy?
The guy I love most.
A good neighbor.
The mayor.
All right, let's get to it. Top 6 at 6 time.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the Top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
At this hour in Portsmouth, England, ceremonies underway. This, on June 5th, 75 years ago, was the launching of D-Day. Tomorrow, the 75th anniversary of the landing of D-Day and the battle that saved the free world. It really is amazing, and I understand there's as many as 300 World War II vets on hand who will be on the beaches of Normandy tomorrow to celebrate as well. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. 390-plus-year-olds. They couldn't even be 90. They would have been 15 at the time. So they must be early 93, 94, 95.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd all be there around that age. They're upper 90s, even some of them.
Yeah, and 300 on hand. Trump has spoken. The Queen has spoken. The Queen of England herself. No spring chicken. What is she, 93?
93.
Yep, 93.
She stood to applaud the vets that were there. It was a cool moment.
And the Chancellor of Germany is there as well. What a great sign of how everybody is now together. The word escapes me, but the
unity?
Unity, reunification, sort of. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see her there as well for all of this.
Yeah, could you think about that? The leader of Germany there at the launch of D-Day.
That's who we were fighting, yeah.
Right? It's amazing when you think about it. One other Trump note. He's getting pushback from Republicans in the Senate who don't want to lose their reelection bids for their cushy Senate jobs because of these Mexican tariffs. And there is talk of developing a coalition, a veto-proof coalition, if Trump decides to veto any pushing back on his Mexican tariffs and that plan. So, look, what are you going to do? You're going to sit around, you're going to wait until the next massive steaming pile of BS comes from Washington. In the meantime, the Republicans getting together here while Trump is over there. And in a couple of interviews he did yesterday, one with Piers Morgan. Unfortunately, if Piers Morgan been kicked out of the country, he hasn't been back in a while.
How is he still relevant? I just don't understand.
I think he's relevant there. Mm. But Piers Morgan, in a conversation with Trump discussing climate change, I just love this quote. President Trump said, hey, climate change goes both ways. What?
It's about both sides. Both sides.
How does climate change go both ways?
I don't think it does.
No. Ay, ay, ay. Next. Alderman Susan Sedlowski Garza spoke out passionately Tuesday for putting a Chicago mega casino near Lake Calumet in her ward. While others in politics and development began arguing about whether the project should go there or over there or over here, J.B. Pritzker discussed his preference for a Chicago casino outside the downtown business district and away from McCormick Place. You'd want to theoretically take advantage of the hotels and tourists in the city, so make it accessible to them, or if the revenue study's been done where the majority of the revenue is going to come from the locals. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, if you go south, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, if you go south, you're going to be closer to the Indiana casinos.
That's
true. If you go out near Rosemont, you've got the Rivers Casino there, right by the airport.
And I don't think you want some monstrosity downtown either. You know what I mean?
No,
mean, you don't want somewhere.
Then you got to deal with parking as well.
It's a tough decision. I know I've privately heard a couple of people talk about the old Michael Reese site as this prime development spot, not just for maybe a new stadium of some sort, but also.
Where's that?
It's just south of McCormick Place. I want
to see it when you're on the end of the I-55,
like Bronzeville?
The end of the Stevenson.
It's where the remember when we bid for the 2016 Olympics? Mm-hmm. It's where they wanted to build the Olympic Village.
Hmm. So just on the other side of 55.
That's yeah,
not
it's
a bad
right
spot.
Yeah. Right there.
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah, accessible, easily accessible off of Lakeshore Drive and from the other side as well.
Unless you want to get to McCormick Place in a hurry. Or unless you want to go play blackjack in a hurry. But anyway, that's what's happening there. And this is what's happening here next. Ed Burke pled not guilty to corruption charges, alleging he abused his city hall clout to extort work for his law firm. Listen, the mayor wants him to resign. He's been around a long time. He's not going to go quietly. There's just something about that moment when Lori Lightfoot turns around to Ed Burke and goes, that's just about enough. You want supper? Sit down. I mean, a full mom moment, man. Yeah. She just took charge. Anyway, Ed Burke is in the news this morning as well. Next. Pfizer had clues its blockbuster drug could prevent Alzheimer's. Enbrel, a powerful anti-inflammatory drug, it appeared to risk the incidence of Alzheimer's disease by as much as 64%. There is some talk about the rollout of Enbrel and the promotion of Enbrel and whether or not it's being put out in a manner that's protecting of profits and not so much interest in patients and people suffering from Alzheimer's or who may sometime soon. But if Enbrel's a breakthrough, let's get it out today.
Yes.
Yes.
Next, the House passed the latest DREAM Act. Of course, remember, the House is controlled by Democrats, and that hopes to place millions of immigrants on a path to citizenship. Seven Republicans in the House joined 230 Democrats in voting for the bill. I don't know how you can rationally say that babies who were born here without any say of where they would be born in the world and have only lived here should now be taken and sent to a country they have no history with. It doesn't make any sense. On top of the fact that their youth and energy and productivity should be a benefit for us, as many thousands of these dreamers are in college learning their trade or whatever their trade might be, and that benefits us in the long run. So anyway, I just humanity plus logic should equal vote for the DREAM Act. Next, the largest rooftop bar in America opens in Chicago's Navy Pier. 36,000 square feet of indoor and outdoor space. Where is this? Literally on the roof of Navy Pier? Hold on. Let me turn around and look.
Steve is now looking towards the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, I can't see anybody fall.
Look up on the third floor. It's on the third floor.
Yeah, but like on a parking garage? Or
Festival Hall.
Yeah, offshore rooftop and bar is in...
Festival Hall's all the way down at the end.
Well, that's, yeah, I believe, where it is.
Which is great, because that's right out by the, you know, you really feel like you're out there in the lake.
So on the roof of Festival Hall, that's a curved roof.
It is. It's got a beautiful curved ceiling. It's like, you know, see-through glass. It's 60-foot bar. Seats 100 people.
And it's going to go around that curve, that the arched roof?
It's like a long, it takes up the whole area in, with the bar in the middle.
On the water side. Well, there's water on both sides.
There's water on both sides.
But on the side that's more city-facing?
I can't tell from the picture, but it just says it's located on the third floor of the Festival Hall. Hmm. And it's 85, the indoors is 8,500 square feet.
Cool idea.
60-foot bar, yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool idea.
Retractable glass walls. Nice.
Yeah. Well, how come we didn't get that here with all the glass we have in this suite? How come this glass isn't retractable?
Can we go do a remote there?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It seats 100 at the bar.
They have breakfast? You know, I don't know if you heard
around from 6 to 10. They have fire pits we can keep warm.
Yeah, a rooftop bar in the summertime, that's a cool place to be.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. There are more and more of them, but I haven't heard of one this big.
It's huge.
And what a great spot for it.
You know, one of the pioneers of rooftop bars was Cindy Crawford's husband, Randy Gerber. Randy Gerber.
Yeah.
Randy Gerber.
How do I know that?
I don't. Well, it's booze.
I guess.
Randy Gerber did one of the first rooftop bars. Right on Sunset Strip in Hollywood. I can't think of it. Oh, the Mondrian Hotel. And I think he's done, you know, a bunch all over the country. But this one, please. Cindy Crawford's husband could kiss our big bar butt.
There you go.
That's your top 6 at 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Busy show. Karen Conti coming up. We got a lot to talk to her about. And speaking of D-Day, a D-Day paratrooper you may have read about in the Trib this past weekend. We're going to talk to Mr. Henry Langer coming up after 7 o'clock.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Lightning striking again.
The older I get, the lighter I sleep, which is not good on a thunder and lightning kind of night. I was up cursing Mother Nature in the middle of the night. I don't know about you. Meanwhile, back here on the ground, just when you thought, wait, what? We legalized marijuana? Oakland, California has legalized magic mushrooms and peyote. This is from USA Today. I don't know. Is this some response to the Golden State Warriors and the Oakland Raiders leaving? Let's all do mushrooms and peyote.
I wouldn't think so.
Oakland City Council in California Tuesday voted unanimously to decriminalize the hallucinogenic fungi, otherwise known as magic mushrooms. The vote makes Oakland the second U.S. city to legalize magic mushrooms. Denver decriminalized them on May 8th. The historic move was a result of a narrowly won popular vote by leaders who were planning on making this move. Oakland's Public Safety Commission advanced the resolution last week as well. So would you have magic mushroom shroom shops, that kind of thing? Where do you buy magic mushrooms?
Farmer's market.
Well, those are regular mushrooms.
Well, where are they going to sell these?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
The black farmer's market. I don't know.
You buy them from the long-haired guy dressed as Wonder Woman in the corner of the bar.
Oh, well, that totally makes sense then. Magic mushrooms and peyote.
It sounds so funny when you say decriminalize a mushroom.
Uh-huh.
It's like the eggplant again. You
know? Peyote, I mean, where are you going to get peyote? You have to go on, the reservations, the reservation gift shop to get peyote? Where are you going to get peyote?
I wouldn't begin to know where to look.
I mean, like, I think the legalization of recreational weed, it has to be carefully administered, and we have to make sure that people aren't driving under the influence, the same way we treat alcohol. By the same token, I think there's a nice chunk of money to be made from this at a time where we need revenue. I'm going to draw the line at magic mushrooms and peyote. I just don't think we know enough.
Just put them next to the organic produce.
I mean, I don't have any plans of going to Oakland anytime soon, but I love Denver.
I think the subset of people that imbibe in magic mushrooms is probably pretty low. I would bet that it's just a handful of people.
What's the high? I mean, how's it different from anything else?
I think it's sort of like an LSD trip. I mean, I've...
Well, then we definitely don't want it legal.
Maybe a little bit more subdued, perhaps. I don't know.
As long as people don't put them in the green bean casserole, that's all I ask.
That would be a problem.
Yes.
That would be a problem.
Especially at Thanksgiving.
That would make Thanksgiving.
Unless it could keep you from having to eat the green bean casserole.
Hey, it's good stuff.
I can see it now. Campbell's Magic Mushroom Cream of Mushroom Soup. Yeah.
Grandma, why are you yodeling? It's 6:31. We're going to come back in just a second, get you the headlines, and then Karen Conti has some legal splaining to do. Steve Cochran Show, good morning. This is 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
It's Karen Conti, Sunday nights on WGN, talking law. What's the name of that show, Karen Conti?
It's called The Karen Conti Show. I thought that up myself.
Yeah, it was focus group, probably.
Yeah. It's been very successful so far.
What time are you on?
I'm on from 7 to 9 p.m.
Doesn't seem like enough. Shouldn't we expand that show maybe 3 or 4 more hours?
I'd like that. Yeah. I'm not sure who else would, but I would.
So you do a fine job with it and a fine job here with us, and we appreciate your time as always. I have to tell you, I am we're going to get to the marijuana legalization thing here in a second, but I'm completely conflicted about this Parkland thing. This is the school security officer who did not enter the school while the shooting went on for, what was it, 15 minutes? Good God. And there's no question. There's no question. Kids died. Some teachers died. And probably in part because he didn't go in. Having said that, is there a precedent for cowardice? I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
Well, he was charged and arrested. And it's interesting because they're misdemeanors and it's child neglect and culpable negligence are the terms. First of all, I don't know how you can be charged with child neglect when they're not your children. I think there's no precedent for that. I don't think there's even precedent for that in any state that I'm aware of. But the issue is, you know, if you're not doing your job and someone dies because of it, is that a crime or is it just negligence? I think that there's been some thought that he didn't do the right thing. He made some mistakes. He told the police not to go in, and he did some things that were wrong. I'm not sure he did them out of cowardice. I'm not sure he just did them out of panic. But do we put people in jail for just screwing up? And that's a great question. I know the families are angry and they're coming out and saying, I hope he rots in prison. But is what he did willful? Was it malicious? Was it intentional? I don't think it was, from what I know. So the question is, do we punish that? And I'm not sure we should.
Yeah, the idea that you can judge somebody on whether or not, even though they're the armed security guard, they're going to run into a situation like that and quite possibly die in the process. There are people who cut out to do that and people who aren't. And every cop I know will tell you the same thing. You don't know till you know. You don't know till that moment comes, you know, which part of you is going to react. And secondarily, the point you just made, Karen, where he directed other cops to form a perimeter and not go in. That to me sounds like a defense, because that doesn't sound like he's going, I'm going to hide over here while you guys go in and save everybody. It sounds like he thought that was what he was supposed to do.
It was a strategic decision, not a malicious decision. And, you know, there's been all kinds of cases about, you know, policemen, you know, if they come on an accident scene. Are they obligated to do mouth-to-mouth? Are they obligated to do first aid? And the law basically says that you really don't, and you can't sue a cop for not doing something. Now, if a policeman comes over and kicks you while you're on the cement, well, of course, that's, you know, that goes above and beyond. That's willful and malicious. But just not doing your job properly, I'm not sure this is going anywhere. I think this is one of those feel-good arrests, and certainly they were probably entitled to fire him, which they did.
Right.
And I think people just need to get better training, and maybe, I don't know how you test someone. When it comes down to it, are you capable of doing what you need to do when there's a school shooting? The only way to do that, I guess, is to have drills. And, you know, I don't know if you ever discussed this on your show, Steve, but these kids are going through these drills all the time all over the country. And some of them are very disturbing. You know, there's real, there's fake blood, there's shots going off, and some of these kids are traumatized by the drills, but that might be the only way to really prepare for a school shooting.
Yeah, even then, I don't think you know till you know. You know, we always get caught up in there are these many shots. Why did he have to shoot this many times? And I can tell you, after going through the FBI Citizens Academy and being put on a simulator, when you see the bad guy, you're not counting the number of times you pull the trigger. You're trying to eliminate the bad guy. And bad guy in quotes. So every time we call a cop to account about how many times they pulled the trigger, I think it's people that don't understand the training that goes into it. And again, you're speaking about something, almost 100% of us are never going to be in that situation. So we're speaking about something we haven't encountered. And we may not be. And so this kid in North Carolina, for instance, who was a hero in college, who gave his life to try to protect others. At that moment, he made a decision. This cop didn't. I think, as you said, the cop should be judged on whether or not he did his job. And I don't think he did. But in the meantime, putting him in jail, I don't know. I just don't know.
I have all the respect in the world for our police officers who are out there every day, and I, you know, they're going to put themselves in harm's way. But I think if they are, if they know that their family is going to be impacted, all of their money is going to be impacted, their liberty is going to be impacted if they do one wrong thing. I mean, you know, you make a mistake on radio, Steve, and what happens? You know, really nothing. No one's listening.
Well,
anyway,
but that's me. It's me because I sit in a meeting and I nod and say I'll never do it again.
Yeah, right, exactly. But if a police officer makes a mistake, he could go to jail. It could be called murder. It could be called, you know, something much worse. So it's just, there's a line there, and I just don't know where you draw that line.
Well,
certainly intentional conduct. You got to punish that. But when you're just screwing up, again, you know, there's laws that you can sue, and these families could perhaps get money. But the idea of putting someone in jail just disturbs me a little bit.
I'm very conflicted on it. Now, here's the other thing. I don't think we'll ever see a time after 9/11 where there'll be grown up, you know, able-bodied people and certainly men on an airplane where that airplane's going to be taken down by terrorists without a fight. It's not going to happen. Having said that, let's say you're on a plane or a bus and there's kids on that bus and you don't confront the terrorist who's taking over the plane or the bus. Are you abdicating your responsibility to protect the children there?
No, I clearly no there. And here's why the case that we're talking about gets closer is, and the average citizen has no obligation to do anything. If I'm sitting at a swimming pool and I'm not a lifeguard and I'm not a parent and a child is drowning, I have absolutely no legal, criminal, whatever obligation to help that child. None whatsoever.
There's no good Samaritan law, and there's no good Samaritan law that applies anywhere.
Well, the Good Samaritan law says that if I try to do it and I do it imperfectly, I can't be sued. But it doesn't mean that I have to do it.
Okay.
But a policeman, you know, there are certain people who do have a duty, a lifeguard. If a lifeguard doesn't do it, then there's culpability. If a parent doesn't do it, clearly there's culpability. But here, you know, in the Parkland case, this guy really was charged with protecting those children. So he did have a higher duty than the average person. And I would even argue higher than a police officer on the street because his sole job was to secure that school. And so that's where you get closer to culpability when, you know, you're charged with that obligation and you don't need it.
Yeah, and I guess the rest of this for me is he's got to live with it every day for the rest of his life. You know, could I have done something? And I would assume he thinks about it every day. And if he doesn't, there's something seriously wrong with him. Could I have done something to make it different? Did I make a terrible mistake? Did I do it intentionally? Was I a coward on some level? It's you know, it's kind of easy for all of us to judge, but until you're in those shoes, I don't know.
Right, and I think I'd be real interested to know what he was trained to do. What exactly was he supposed to do? What did he think he was doing, and why did that fail? And you know, we hear the stuff on the media, and we don't know the niceties of it until we hear the trial and see the trial. Maybe having a trial would be helpful so that we know how this thing, how this thing went wrong.
We'll come back and let's talk about the pot. Oh, you're
all
on
right.
The pot. Legalized marijuana in Illinois while you were sleeping last weekend. We'll come back and discuss the legal ramifications of that. Karen Conti's here. Karen, coming up after 7 o'clock, an actual D-Day hero, Mr. Henry Langer, parachuted into France on D-Day. And survived and lived to tell about it. Amazing guy. You may have seen the Chicago Tribune story over the weekend. We'll talk to that great hero coming up here in just a few minutes. Talking with Karen County now about pot, weed. You know what I'm talking about, Karen? I'm talking about grass. Mary Joanna.
I am.
All right, so here's my question. What's changed in the law, and when does it go into effect?
It goes into effect January 1st. So the dispensaries that are already out there doing the medical marijuana will be able to sell marijuana for recreationally. So those are the 55 medical dispensaries who are already in business. They're going to sell it. I believe they're allowed to open up another store. So those are already in place. And then by 2020, we're going to have licenses for more. So probably all in all, by 2020, we'll have 300 stores across the state where you can buy recreational marijuana.
And if I were Culver's, I would open a Culver's next to every one of them.
That's a great idea.
Make them 24 hours.
That's right. It's gonna be very interesting because it's gonna change a bunch of things, and there's going to be laws that are gonna be tested in other areas. You know, I mean, from landlord-tenant laws to employment laws to DWI or driving while impaired. You know, there's all kinds of different things that are gonna happen now because we have the ability to smoke pot marijuana recreationally, and our laws are gonna have to adjust to this.
Strictly cash?
I don't know exactly how that's going to work. There's some, you know, obviously it's still a federal crime. So the problem with using credit cards and using banks is that could fall as an illegal transaction. So all those things are just so interesting. And what is our administration going to do in Washington? You know, there's a possibility. I mean, I don't know that it's a probability. Could the administration say, well, you know, it's still a federal crime. We don't like these laws, and we're going to come in and we're going to raid and arrest people who are selling this stuff. I hope that doesn't happen. That seems like a stupid thing to do. But, you know, who knows when you have this kind of conflict in the law.
And you're going to be able to grow some at home?
Well, my understanding is that if you are a medical marijuana user, yes, you can. You can grow up to 5 plants.
Well, what if you grow 6? Who's going to find out?
You know, I guess nobody. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, Steve, is this employment law, because people think, okay, now I'm going to smoke, and now if I blow positive in a drug test that my employer gives me, they can't fire me, and that's just not the case. An employer can still say no tolerance to drugs, and that includes marijuana, even if it's recreationally illegal in Illinois. So let's just say you have a workplace, you know, you go in, you get the test done. If you're on medical marijuana, you show them your card and you say, listen, I have a legal right to have it. It's a medical case. The employer then has an obligation to accommodate you because that's a disability. Sure. And they have to accommodate your medical issue. If you're just smoking to get high, even though it's legal, the employer can say, did you see our policy? Did you see that we have a no tolerance rule? And they can fire you for that.
That's
so you've got to be
point.
Very clear, you know, what your employer expects of you and what the law is in your workplace.
And as you've said for years, you can be fired for any reason.
That's right.
Yeah, people think that's not true, but it is, in fact, true. Before I let you go, just an opinion question. I asked Viv this a second ago off the air. I believe, Karen Conti, that the majority of pot smokers, not just in Illinois but around the country, are 40-plus. I think the notion that this is some kid thing that's going to be fantastic for kids, I'm not saying that 20-year-olds don't smoke pot, that teenagers don't, but I think this is a bigger deal for 40-plus. So, Viv, folks your age, mm-hmm. and we'll say that you're under the age of 40 and 30, folks your age, your generation, is anybody talking about this?
We're not talking about it.
It's not a big deal to you guys.
No.
Here's my question. Are the people who are buying it now, illegally, of course, are they going to now go into the store and buy it legally and pay a 25% tax on it? I'm wondering that, too.
That'd be funny. Your dealer goes, hey, dude, I can get you a better deal.
And, you know, it's an interesting statistic. In Colorado, everyone over the age of 6, if you take everybody, 15% of the population has smoked marijuana in the last year. I just find that really high. I mean, pardon the pun.
15% of the entire population over the age of 6.
Yes.
It's nothing sadder than a 6-year-old with a bong.
Is that because more people are trying it all of a sudden?
Maybe so.
Yeah, they're just like,
I don't
point.
Know.
It's a good point.
That's a lot of people.
All right, opinion. Where are most of the pot smokers? Over 40, under 40? Dave.
Over 40, under, I would say under 40.
Under 40?
Yeah.
Well, you're wrong.
Opinion.
Mary.
I'm going over.
Yeah, me too.
But I do know quite a few younger kids that are on it for medical reasons.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about recreational.
Right, but medical?
Steve? Steve Rozanich?
Yes, I'm here.
Over 40 or under 40?
Me? I'm way over 40.
No. I know you're listening to a news
smoking,
piece.
Steve.
People
you're
smoking marijuana, the majority over 40 or under 40?
I would say over 40.
Yeah, same here.
I would say over 40.
Yeah. So what are you, Viv, what are you and your friends up to? Because it's going to be something.
We're good
if it's
kids.
Not the pot, it's going to be something.
Hey, we're good kids.
Don't think we won't get to the bottom of this.
Vape is very popular. Yep.
The millennials have no money to spend on drugs. That's the
problem. That's the answer right there.
That's a tough one to ask your parents for money for, too. Mom, can I go get some weed? Where's your purse? I don't think that goes.
Was there a right or wrong answer to that question?
No, as long as you agree with me, it's always right. Karen Conti, thank you for being on the show.
Well, you're so welcome. Have a great day.
You as well. That's Karen Conti, kconti at kconti.law. Is that right? No, kcontilaw.com. Kconti at kcontilaw.com, he said. That's how you get a hold of her. A D-Day hero coming up. News 2 next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Chris Gentry serves as a Major General in the U.S. Army Reserves, over 35 years of active and reserve component experience. And the gentleman featured in this Tribune story is absolutely amazing. He is Mr. Henry Langer, and Henry parachuted into France on D-Day. He was with, and I think friends with, that famous parachutist that ends up getting hooked on the church steeple, which you've seen in every D-Day movie you've ever paid attention to.
It's an amazing story, and to sit down and speak with Henry face-to-face about that, and he talks about it pretty casually, but just to think about what he went through on that day for the rest of us and for Western civilization is just amazing. I asked him, what was going through your head on that day, and he said everybody was taking it pretty casually, you know, guys even whistling and singing, but of course when they got into the plane, they started to go over the Armada, and then when they started taking fire, they said that's when things got a little bit more serious. Henry, who was trained in demolitions, his mission was to blow up a bridge, so he gathered up, from what we understand, he gathered up what men were available and set out to do that. And unfortunately, in that process, they get captured by the Germans, and he was severely injured and recovered from that, but then was sent off to work in the coal mines for the Germans after that.
Just an incredible story, and it is beyond an honor to welcome to the program D-Day hero, Mr. Henry Langer. Thank you for doing this, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
I appreciate this. God bless you and all that you served with for the amazing thing you did, not just on that day, but throughout the war and saving the rest of the world for peace. There's no way to thank you enough. No words apply.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Very kind. But, you know, I was only one of 160,000.
Right.
Excuse me, numbers, but there were so many of us that made the invasion, you know, that singling out one is, you know, it's quite hard to do.
Well, and I know this is uncomfortable. My dad was a World War II vet. I know it's uncomfortable, especially for a good kid from Clinton, Iowa, to talk about how special they are or their contribution is. So I will grant you that it was a contribution by all of you. Those who lived, those who died, and those who survived today. But, you know, I asked you to come on, and you were nice enough to do it, because those of us who are here who have an understanding or appreciation of this as much as we can, just being able to talk to you somehow ties us to that moment. So if you don't mind, I'd like to go through that a little bit, because as I understand it, you were a high school kid that would have graduated from high school that week had you not been in the service?
And well, when I went into the service, I volunteered to go into the service as a paratrooper. That I left my classmates at that time, which was 1943, mm-hmm. and 40% of my class also came out that same time that they didn't graduate either. And a lot of them did not make it back home.
The amazing thing to me is the age of the men that we're talking about here, and obviously there were the thousands and thousands and thousands of women who contributed at the highest level allowed at the time as well.
Right.
But the story, as it's told through this opinion piece that was written in the Tribune over the weekend, and the gentleman you just heard from, it really paints an amazing picture. As I understand it, you jump out of the plane, you look below you, there's an armada of ships, there's parachutes all over in the sky, there's planes everywhere. What were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking mostly of the job that we had to do when we got there. That was pretty well drilled into us. And, of course, there's a certain amount of fear. And, you really don't know what's going to happen because, you know, it's your first trip into combat.
That's the other piece of this. It wasn't like you had a bunch of battles you could warm up on.
No. No, it's very true. Most of the troops that even hit the beaches were green troops. But they, after the first bullet's fired, then you get to be a veteran.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, you and fellow paratroopers were tasked to jump into the French countryside to blow up bridges to keep German forces from mounting a counterattack. But as things got ugly and the planes were shot at and things, a lot of the planes went too low for soldiers to open their chutes. Other planes were shot down.
Right.
You, as I understand it, went crashing through a greenhouse roof. Is that right?
That's right. And, right next to the church.
And the church is where your friend John Steele got caught on the church steeple. If every D-Day movie you've seen this. There's a tribute to John Steele still there today with a chute on, wrapped on that particular steeple. And the only reason he survived is because he hung there and played dead for hours. You then ran 5 miles with a group of other survivors to blow up the bridge.
Yes, but we didn't blow the bridge. My job was to blow the bridge in case we couldn't hold it. And we did hold it. The 508 Parachute Infantry had got there just a bit before we did. And they had taken chased the Germans out of there. And so they had secured the bridge. And we was down there to hold that bridge. Because if the bridges were in hold and the Germans could get armor and that down to the beaches, we'd have never made it. And that was our objective, was to take the city, the bridges. St. Mary Glise was a center point of 4 different roads that led down to the beach.
Yeah, it's crucial.
And if they would have captured those roads with the tanks and the infantry, that we would have never succeeded there. And that was Eisenhower's plan, to make sure that those bridges and those cities that were secured.
You eventually were forced to be a prisoner of war, Germans forced prisoners to work in very dangerous coal mines. A lot of POWs died, but you and another soldier got out, and you made a run. Where did you go from there?
Can I jump back a little bit?
Of course.
All right. I fought through the countryside, the hedgerows and that, and on June 30th, I was wounded, and I was taken prisoner, and I was put in a field hospital first, and they dressed me up as much as they could, and then they sent me to a hospital. I was in a field hospital just a day or so, and by truck they took us at night took a couple of nights to get to Paris, where I was in a hospital there, and German doctors operated on me and took shrapnel on my back and my legs and that. And I was there about a month, and then I was sent to Salag 12A and that was a place, a camp, where they put you in different areas, like you might work on a farm, work in a factory. I was sent to a coal mine, yes, and it was a very bad coal mine. It was always people, when we had 12-hour shifts in the mine, and when you went up to the tipple, that's where you came out on the elevator up above. It was about a quarter of a mile underground, and when we got to the top, that's where we got out, and that's where they dumped the coal out. But there was always 4 or 5 bodies laying there of people that were killed in the mine on that shift. So it was a very dangerous place, and the SS run it, and they were just horrible people, which would have been criminals if they'd have been in civilian life, I think, anyway.
Sure.
Very cruel.
So you
went into the mine at first, and there was a Czechoslovakian young old man working. Mm-hmm. I considered him old man because I'm a young man, 19 years old.
Sure.
And he was probably about 45. But anyway, this SS guard told me to work. And I said, well, I don't work for the, you know, the war industry. I said, the Geneva Convention says I'm a prisoner of war and treated as such. I didn't get the words of my mouth hardly, and he worked me over with a rifle, and pretty bad. And so I didn't do much that day. But the next day was the same scenario. I wouldn't work, and he really worked me over good that day and broke a couple of ribs and one thing and the other. And of course, they don't give you any doctors or anything, so you're hurting pretty bad. And this old Czech said to me, and you know, I'm surprised. These people could speak English. The Germans could speak English. My SS guards, they spoke English. You could tell, but they tried to give you a command like in German, like to say work, Arbeit. But anyhow, he said, if you don't work, they'll kill you. And that's true, because when I first came into that camp, which was an old factory, the commandant lined us all up, and he gave a little speech, and he said, no one has ever escaped from this camp, and if you escape, we'll bring you back, and we'll shoot you. And that happened twice while I was there. Yes. One group, two white Russians, and another one I think was a Czech. But anyway, they actually did, and they take these people and put them up against the wall. They shot them, they put them in a wooden box, and then they made us all walk in front of it and see. And then after you did that, then he said, "That's what happens when you escape."
Well, you had to get out of there. Then you had to leave. You had to get out as soon as you possibly could. And yeah. When you and a friend did, I understand you were trapped in a barn. You ended up in hand-to-hand combat with a couple of Germans.
No,
not true?
No, that was, no. We got into the barn, and a Volksman had seen us on the outskirts of this town. We didn't even know it was a little village, because being in the prison camp, we didn't know the area around us. So when we escaped, we come upon this little village, and a Volkstroben policeman spotted us as we just got to the edge of the village, and he told us to halt. And we knew if we were caught that what was going to happen. So there was a barn just a short distance from where we were at. Well, we headed for the barn, and when we got inside, for some reason, I don't know, the good Lord was there, because I stepped behind the door that would open in, and the back of that door was a 2x4 that they used to close the doors on the inside.
Yeah, sure.
And as he came in to the barn, he had his pistol drawn. He shot my friend and killed him. And I hit him across the face with the 2x4, and of course, you know what happened then. So I took his weapons and his ammunition, and I took off.
You were able to eventually make it to safety, because I want people to understand, this wasn't just D-Day. You lived, you know, a month and more of your life being under threat and worse and beatings and everything every single day. What kept you going?
Well, I'll tell you. The good Lord was with me. My wife, my girlfriend at the time, she prayed constantly for me, and I know God has hand in my life, because of all the narrow escapes I could tell you about combat, where I should have never made it out, God was there. And I want people to know God is real. He really brought me through. And I guess I had such strong feelings about wanting to get back home, you know, and my wife and I, my girlfriend and I, had made plans for when I got back. So, you know, the drive to live is pretty strong.
You came back and had a good life, and have a good life. You raised kids, one of which served in uniform, grandchildren, great-grandson. It's an amazing, amazing story, and I know you're modest about it, and you want us to make sure we recognize all who served, and we certainly do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But again, having said that, what do you want to say to people who are too young to remember D-Day, or maybe don't completely, and not by any fault of their own, but don't completely understand the significance of it? What do you want us to know?
I know I have to say this, and I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings, but I say to God be the glory. Through me, God saved me for a purpose, and the purpose was to bring me back, and I had a family. I was one of the very fortunate ones. War is horrible. There is no glory in war. No glory whatsoever. It's a terrible business.
And we should avoid it at all costs.
Absolutely.
Well, I share your beliefs, and thank God that that you were saved. And through all your strength, you inspire the rest of us. You sound terrific. Do you feel good?
Oh, yes. I feel well. Well, for a man my age, I feel very good.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with you.
Well, thank you so much.
It is Mr. Henry Langrare. I really appreciate you doing this and giving us a chance to talk to somebody who served on that day. I don't know if the words happy anniversary apply, considering the circumstances, but we're awfully happy that you're okay and still with us and able to share memories like this. So thank you, sir.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
There you go. Not just the pride of Clinton, Iowa, pride of America. Isn't that something else?
Wow.
Unbelievable. It's Mr. Henry Langrare, and thank you again for doing that. As you would imagine, text pouring in, and I'll just share a few of these with you, including, by the way, a picture of the steeple on the chapel where John Steele came down in his parachute. And that tribute still hangs today. Anyway, what a fascinating man from the 815. What a perfectly beautiful man. We got a bunch of people texting in about how they're crying, but they've never been prouder or more proud to be an American. This is the kind of unity that made this country great, and that's why I really urge you to talk to your kids, your grandkids, anybody that doesn't understand the weight of the anniversary of D-Day on the 75th anniversary. 231, amazing story. Thank him for his service. What bravery for such a young man. And on and on and on. Thank you for all of your texts, including the ones that might be a little political that I don't think I'd address here, but your points are well taken. In the meantime, the MVPP, sponsored by MegaPros, to make it fun to get stuff done. Dave, big surprise. The MVPP today? Mr. Langrare.
I would think so.
Yep.
Yes, no doubt.
Not too hard to figure that out.
Nope.
Most definitely.
What a guy. 708 texter, I was at Midway this morning sending my teenager on a flight to Denver, and was so cool to see an honor flight going out this morning as well. How about that?
Yeah, I bet.
Filling that plane with World War II vets to go see the monument for them in Washington.
And today
on the eve of D-Day.
Yeah, today of all days.
That's goosebump stuff.
Yes.
This is today's Pucks in Prague clip of the day.
We went to my girlfriend's parents for Christmas, and she's got an older brother and older sister, and the older brother has four girls, and then her older sister has three girls. So I'm surrounded by like seven of her nieces just climbing all over me throughout the holidays. But, you know, they came to a couple games this year, and we lost. And the nine-year-old Audrey came up to me and said, you know, you guys have to score more goals. That's all it takes. You just got to score more goals than the other team.
That is today's Pucks in Prague clip of the day.
Oh, man!
And you hear it again this afternoon with Ro Khan. Be caller number...
Hi, this is Jonathan.
19.
Hi,
win a Blackhawks prize pack, including tickets to the Blackhawks convention, and be qualified to win a trip for two to see the Hawks open their season in Prague, Czech Republic against the Flyers. Listen to Ro Khan today to win.
Listen to Ro with Anna between 5:30 and 6. Super Joe, remind me if you would. But wasn't the punchline that was Patrick Kane's Babe Ruth moment? Because didn't they go out and score a bunch of goals after that?
Yeah, after the holidays, some of the nieces came to the game, and he had like eight goals. Abigail Grace was at that game, too.
Right. Never question Patrick Kane's ability to listen to children and get it done. Congratulations to Paul Skolin, a Darien, who was yesterday's winner. Tune into the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeMontis between 5:30 and 6. Not now! But later, between 5:30 and 6, you'll hear that clip from Kaner again. And when you do, that's when you call in to be a grand prize qualifier. By qualifying, you will get the Blackhawks fan package, which includes four tickets to the Blackhawks convention, a signed replica jersey, a signed hockey stick, a signed puck and photo. Plus, you'll be qualified to win a trip for two to see the Hawks open their season in Prague. You know what that is? That's Steve Cochran's European vacation.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to lead a bunch of people to Prague.
And you're planning some special stuff too, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna probably do karaoke in the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And please listen to the Steve Cochran Show weekday mornings at 7:40 for your chance to win. We're only doing this for a few days. We're going to announce the grand prize winner next week. Or, well, no, not next week. This Friday.
This week, yeah.
This Friday. Plus, we've got some other stuff to tell you about, too. But this Friday at 7:40 is a couple days away. Complete details, including official rules, at WGNradio.com/contests. All right, 7:46. Tomorrow at this time. Well, the texts are just pouring in about Mr. Langer, which you obviously could understand. My late father-in-law landed on Normandy 75 years ago. He spoke very little of his experiences. One of the best days of my life was going with my family to Midway to welcome his honor flight back home. So proud to be an American. 773, thanks for the wonderful talk with Henry Langer, a beautiful person. My father, who's no longer with us, made 3 air missions on June 6, 1944, over Normandy. Their group lost 4 planes and 13 flyers that day. 224, I went to Normandy, France last year, visit Omaha and Utah beaches, the town with a parachute on the church steeple, but the most humbling part of the trip was visiting the American cemetery, where I was able to place a rose at the gravesite of an Illinois soldier. Let us never forget their sacrifices. And, Steve, could you post the interview of the veteran today? I must play that for my husband, who is a paratrooper. Michael's working on that right now. We'll have it all across social media, Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else. And, of course, WGNRadio.com. Tomorrow at this time, we will do the show live from the annual Jared Payton golf outing. Where are we doing that, Dave? Ruffled Feathers?
Ruffled Feathers.
We'll do the show live from 6 to 10. Ro Khan will join me and all sorts of sports figures and celebrities and various folks who are out there to play.
You guys are going to golf and do the show at the same time?
I could.
Right.
But I'm actually going to focus on the show. Oh, whatever.
Okay. So you'll be antsy and ready to drive and putt.
During every break, I'm going to go off to the first tee and just start pelting people with balls down the fairway.
Thanks for the warning.
But standing by is Mackenzie Shimka. She's going in the 7th grade at Algonquin Middle School, where JP spoke to the school on March 19th of this year, talking about bullying. And good morning to you, Mackenzie.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you remember when Jared came to the school? I mean, it's been a couple of months now.
I do remember.
Were you bullied?
I have been. It wasn't a very pleasant experience.
I can imagine. And did you get help?
Well, I had that little shy part in me where I didn't really want to tell people, but I ended up telling my mom. And we got it figured out, and I just kind of blew it off like it was nothing.
But I understand that when your sister was bullied, you'd had just about enough.
Yeah, that's when I get very protective, because my sister, she was born with extra water in her head, and I'm very protective of her because I don't want anything to happen to her. She's my sister. I'm there for her.
I have a special needs brother who's a little older than me. I went through the same thing you went through as a kid, and nothing would make me angry or more courageous than seeing somebody being mean to him. So I get it, and I'm proud of you, Mackenzie.
Thank you.
So Jarrett and the Payton Foundation, they want to do everything they can to stop bullying, and I hope his speech that day struck with you guys.
I think it really did. Because so many people, they're just amazed to see how all of these stories that he told all wrapped around the same concept and idea about how you can help prevent it.
And I know you're not old enough to appreciate what a big deal Walter Payton was, but to think that Walter Payton's kid, Jarrett, was bullied in school is pretty crazy too, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it can happen to anybody is the point. Well, you're an impressive young lady. What are you going to do with your life? What do you want to be when you grow up, Mackenzie?
Thank you. I want to be a pediatrician orthopedic, and I want to go to school at U of C.
I have no doubt you're going to be successful, and I hope you'll take our call.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
The Payton Foundation. I believe it's Payton's Son, right? Isn't that the website you go to for all this stuff? You guys check that out for me.
Yeah, I will. I actually just had the website up, and I will find it again.
And we'll be there tomorrow doing the golf outing. I don't know. What would you call it? Pre-game?
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it.
They're going
to
tee off mid-show at 8 a.m. And for the last 2 hours, I'll be highly bitter while I'm talking to you guys as opposed to playing golf. Vivian, you were telling me off the air, you were bullied, right?
Yeah.
What was the deal?
So when I moved here, I was nine, mm-hmm. actually eight. So I didn't speak any English.
You grew up from Greece?
Yep. Yep. So we moved here back in 2001, and I didn't speak English. So when I went, when I got into third grade, a lot of kids would bully me, and they would, you know, make fun of me that I didn't speak.
Because you couldn't speak English?
Yeah, because I didn't speak English. So I was in ESL for 2 years. And I just hated the fact that I would go to school every day and have kids pick on me and you know, just make me feel so bad that, you know, I wasn't able to communicate with them. So,
but it wasn't just that, right?
Yeah.
What else did they pick on you?
So when I was younger, I got burned with hot water. I was 10 months old.
Wow.
So there was a scar. I have a scar that's visible. It's on my arm, my left arm. And kids, you know, obviously don't really know how to take that, right? So, you know, I remember one girl came up to me and said, oh my God, what is that? Who's going to marry you? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, here we go.
And you're how old then? Seventh grade?
I was in seventh grade when that happened.
It's that whole Mean Girls thing, right?
Yeah, I know. It is. Yeah, it is.
So who helped? Your family?
Family, teachers. And the good thing with me is that I always talked about it. I always talk. So I would go home, talk to my mom, talk to my dad. And it's funny, when I brought up the bullying about, you know, not speaking English, you know, I would tell my dad would be like, what do you mean? Greeks invented everything. They should not be telling you what to do. And I'm like, oh, God, here we go. So I would laugh.
You're not wrong, Dad, but that's not helping right now.
Get out the Windex. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So they helped me. My family, definitely teachers, ESL teachers too. It's powerful to speak a second language. So,
without a doubt.
Yeah. So I became very proud of that.
And schools certainly can do more. It's not easy for schools, but I know most of them are trying really, really hard to prevent this. But hey, listen, I've said this before, parents, don't assume your kid's a good kid. I'm not knocking your kid. But don't assume your kid is not part of the problem. If you have any inkling that they are bullying kids at school, you got to stop it. It's on you to shut it down because it's cruel. It's unnecessary, and there's scars that can last for life.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to be nice.
Exactly. Well, I think you've recovered well.
I think so, too. Thanks, Steve.
But you're a good spokesperson for the fight. Again, tomorrow, live from Ruffled Feathers from 6 to 10 a.m. I forgot to mention jaredpayton.org, J-A-R-E-T-T-P-A-Y-T-O-N, jaredpayton.org. That's the foundation website. Did I say 1 hour? 2 hours. 1 hour? Oh, yeah, that's 2 hours. J-A-R-R-E-T-T.
Yeah, Peyton's son is the social media.
Got it.
That's where
Got
you can
it.
Find him on Twitter.
Okay, so J-A-R-R-E-T-T, Peyton.org. President Trump and more on entertainment coming up. News next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
entertainment from your favorite morons, Dean Richards and me. Good morning, Warren.
Steve, good morning to you. I know you love whenever people mention moron entertainment to us in our real lives. I'm at the dermatologist's office yesterday. I'm in the
wait. You're where?
Dermatologist's office.
Of course. Why wouldn't you get a reference
having a couple,
there?
Having a couple of little moles checked. I'm fine. Thanks for asking. And one of the medical assistants checks everything, goes, okay, we'll be with you in a few minutes, moron. I don't know if she listens to the show.
That's the kind of
that was just her early assessment of me.
That's the kind of respect we get. By the way, this is all sponsored by our friends at Ravinia. Would you like to name all of our friends at Ravinia?
Each and every one by a name?
Yeah, it probably would take too long. When are you going to be at Ravinia?
I'll be there July 12th and 21st.
And you'll be performing with the symphony, playing your oboe?
I'm going to be performing. My big oboe career is about to be launched. I'll be hosting a West Side Story. They show the movie West Side Story with Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing the score, and that's on the 12th. And on the 21st, Ghostbusters.
You're going to do that Twitter text thing where people send you live messages?
Yeah, yeah, they have a Twitter board behind me on the lawn where I do a little question and answer presentation. And you can tweet any question that you want or comment in, and it shows up on the board. And then I will spontaneously respond to you.
You know, you get this question all the time, so do I. By the way, Dean has a special guest today. We'll get to that special guest in just moments.
We have to turn his headphones on.
By yeah, I don't like his chances.
We have to take a break before we get our special guest.
That'll be just fine. But you get asked this all the time, and I do too. Who's your favorite guest of all time? Who's the greatest guest you ever had on? We had a guy, and I know you didn't hear this because you were doing TV, but last hour we had on a paratrooper from D-Day.
Oh.
Nice kid from Clinton, Iowa.
Yeah.
And just an amazing story about the heroism of that day, 75th anniversary tomorrow, what he did, how casual he is about it. He told a particular part of the story where he's already escaped death multiple times over the course of a month. And he and his buddy run into a barn trying to get away from a German policeman. The policeman gets into the door before they can fully close it, shoots his friend and kills him. And Mr. Henry Langrare had, as he put it, you know the 2x4 they used to block the door on a barn from the inside?
Yeah.
He goes, I grabbed that, I hit him, and well, that took care of him. Okay? And that was just one of the stories. Wow. And you know the World War II guys, they don't brag. They're the greatest generation. They don't talk about, oh,
They would rather not talk about it.
Right. But just an amazing interview, and it's up all over your social media situations and your WGNradio.com. Give it a listen.
That's powerful. People think, you know, because I talk to a lot of A-listers, that those are the greatest interviews. Without a doubt, the best interviews, the most moving to me, are the ones when I've done my breast cancer special.
No, I'm not sure.
And you talk to somebody who's dealing with stage 4 malignant cancer, breast cancer in this case, and how courageous they are in dealing with it. And, you know, some did not survive. Many did survive. But it's inspiring. It's moving to me even now.
Yeah, and I've heard you talk to people for years in doing that special. And it's amazing to me that in the worst moments of their life, those people want to help others.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them not in the best of health. And they...
that's not working.
What are you doing? Can you not hear in there?
No, I can't hear you.
All right.
Oh, don't give away our top secret guest's identity.
Come and fix it. Mystery guest is getting upset because the headphones aren't working. Well, they were working a minute ago when I set it up.
Have him go diva like he does every other day.
He broke it.
Coming up, Tracy Morgan's new car, Punky Brewster, James Bond, Robert Downey Jr., and Empire, and the never-ending story of Jesse Friggin Smollett. I think he changed his name to that.
Legally.
One thing before we go to the break, Steve, 847, you're back on my good side after the interview you did with that great old soldier. So wonderful for allowing him to tell his story. You're back on my good side, especially after the spoiler disaster this week.
I'm still mad at you for that.
Oh, it's got a title now.
Yeah, the spoiler disaster. Now, Dave Ennett sent me a text yesterday that said that Alex Trebek was quite pleased because Jeopardy's ratings were highest in how many years, 12? Yeah.
I thought 14 years is what years. I saw.
Mm, okay. Mm.
Yeah. I don't know that there was any actual comment that Alex Trebek was, but he had to be. He had to be pleased.
He had to be pleased. The bonus check kicked in. Trebek owes me money.
He said, Steve, I'm very happy with what you did.
Who drove the rating? No, drove the ratings up? Who is Steve Cochran? Disappointed the listeners? Who is Steve Cochran?
I'm mad at you, though.
Yeah, I know you are. Yeah.
Just want to be.
I'll get in line. 8:15, we're back in a moment.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, channel.
By the way, Dean, President Trump will be calling me again this morning.
When did he call you last?
Oh, he calls every week.
Oh,
yeah.
Didn't know that. From London?
Yeah, he's calling. You think he'll call collect?
I want to keep costs down.
Right. So it's my contribution to the federal budget if I take his collect call.
Yep.
So if you were, had a friend that you would invite on this very, very special segment sponsored by Ravinia from the WGN Morning News, who would it be?
Well, there's only one person I can think of, and it's...
Anna Belleval.
That's right. It would be Anna Belleval. He's not wrong.
Since but she's unavailable.
Yeah, she's not here right now, so instead we got Pat Tomasulo.
Yeah.
WGN Sports, and of course, from Man of the People, Saturday nights at 10 p.m. on WGN
I love
TV.
That Man of the People show. What time is it?
Saturday night at 10.
What channel?
What channel, Dean?
It would be the big number 9.
The big number 9, not the small number 9.
Let me take you kids by.
Let me just say, you guys really blowing out the production budget for those Dean Richards jingle intros.
Right?
Those are fantastic.
Yeah. Well, John DeCoste, musical director of the show, getting it done.
He's the musical director of the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, love of God.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, if you want, sure, why not?
Yeah.
I just want to congratulate you on the fine work. Because, Dean, you know this. Let's go behind the curtain of show business. You get a show on a television station, a major television station like Channel 9. You're lucky if it lasts 3 episodes before the management comes in and just whacks it.
Unless you're Bozo.
Oh, yeah, Bozo would be an exception. Yeah. Bozo and Pat Tomasulo, as far as you know, no tie. And have you celebrated your one-year anniversary yet?
1 year. You know what's? We're at a year and a half now. And not only that, this Saturday night is our 50th episode. You believe? Whoa, my God. Woo. Listen to that raucous appreciation.
You're getting the rare sitting ovation.
Oh, man, you guys are too kind.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Some of the biggest reactions, Steve, that I have gotten to anything that I've done on the air last year was when I was on Pat's Man of the People show, mm-hmm. pretending to be Billy Joel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was very funny.
We went out on the streets. Pat dressed like my sleazy showbiz manager. And we had a big limo. They'd set up a big limo that said Billy Joel tour. And we went out and people legitimately thought I was Billy Joel.
Yeah, a little behind-the-scenes tidbit about that. As we were getting ready and we were in pre-production to do that piece, Dean said, listen, I don't know what you guys handle all the funny. I'm not the funny one.
Yeah.
You guys handle it. So we wrote all these jokes, and this freaking guy took over the whole piece. He was amazing.
Right, right.
He got one taste of the Billy Joel lifestyle.
Right.
And he was an unquenchable thirst.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Dean is one of the funniest people I know.
Dancing
my favorite
with
was,
old ladies.
Yeah,
and
gave an old lady a foot massage in a swanky shoe store.
Illegally walking into a shoe store and videotaping them. But
right.
That's neither here nor there.
Who needs a release?
Who needs a release?
So how do you get on the show from a release standpoint? Because I've been on the show as well, Dean. You remember I was on the George Clooney lookalike show.
Oh, yeah.
And
second place finisher.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Pat, how do people get on to watch the show? How do they get in to see one of those Friday tapings?
Oh, to see it live? Well, Steve, funny you should ask. They can go to manofthepeople.com, and the tickets are free. We tape every Friday. Audience gets there at 1:30. You're out the door by 3. It's a fun field. Dean's attended at least 15 live tapings. Hmm.
They've asked me to leave.
Yeah, Dean is...
Enough.
Dean's schedule. He's a jet-setting entertainment reporter. The guy's got not an ounce of free time, but he makes sure at least every other week he's in that studio just watching. That's
you watch the studio shots, the audience reaction shots. If you watch carefully, find me. It's like
he's
Where's
there.
Waldo? Find me in the audience somewhere.
Yeah, and by the way, I have been banned. Do you know the story, Dean?
I did not know that.
Tell him the story.
I thought it would be funny to bring in a busload of chronic coffers just to fill the seats. And it turns out he didn't think it was that funny. So, hey, happy 50th.
Thanks, man.
50
and,
shows.
Yeah, 50 shows. I can't believe it.
That's halfway to Rerun Residuals.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, get 100 episodes.
I'm sure that's being discussed.
You know what I was wondering, though? If I wanted to see Pat somewhere and didn't want to come all the way to Bradley Place, let's just say if I was in the Rosemont area, for example.
Wow, Dean, it is funny that you should mention that in a totally unforced segue whatsoever. What you would be talking about is Man of the People Night at the Chicago Dogs game next Friday, June 14th.
Come on!
Yeah. Yeah, listen, a lot of guys can throw out a first pitch, which I will be doing, or sing the seventh inning stretch, but how many guys get an entire night at a ballpark devoted completely to their show? Only this guy. This guy.
That's exactly right. You wouldn't be exaggerating at all. This is that cool stadium. There's two stadiums off of 294 in Rosemont. One is for the women's team, and one is for the Dogs, the men's team right next door. And you'll be at the Dogs stadium.
Yeah, I will be at the Dog Stadium. We will be giving out Man of the People swag. I'll be throwing out the first pitch. I'll be doing stuff between innings. And we actually have a contest going right now on WGNTV.com/contest, where you can enter to watch a few innings of the game with me in the party deck there. I'm going to go out and say right now on a limb it'll be the earlier innings because it's too late for me to stay for the whole
game. You're not even going to stay for the entire game. No. It's your night. What do you mean you're not staying for the entire game?
I'm so tired. 8:30. Who stays out past 8:30? Oh, who are these maniacs?
It's outrageous.
Right?
By the way, Paul Rennie is Bat Boy that night, the general manager of WGN Television and Radio, and he is covered in pine tar.
Now, see, I heard he was going to be dressed as either the giant ketchup bottle or the giant mustard bottle.
He was letting you have first pick, and whichever one you don't want to be,
he'll take the other.
Yeah, well, either way, they're going to look great. All right, Paul. Is it Paul or Pat?
No, Pat.
Pat, congratulations on all of your show business success.
Thanks, buddy. And it's Man of the People night next Friday.
Next Friday. Get your WGN Radio and WGNTV.com websites locked in. And go see Man of the People. God, would it kill you? Show up. Support Pat Tomasulo, sometimes known as Paul.
Funny show.
So, all right, let's jump in. Tracy Morgan got a new car, and what happened?
Tracy Morgan just didn't get a new car. He got a new Bugatti car.
Oh, those are not cheap, Dean.
Completely unfamiliar with all of this.
Yeah, the Bugatti, you get a used Bugatti, I think it's $1.6 million.
I thought it was a Bugatti.
Yeah, Bugatti.
Bugatti. That's how unfamiliar
I am. Bugatti, I say Bugatti.
His car, he just bought it brand new, $2.1 million, all right? It's beautiful. He drives it out of the showroom within 5 minutes. Gets in a fender bender.
Oh, no. Was he hurt?
With somebody on the street. Nobody was hurt.
I mean, for people that don't remember, he was nearly killed in a car accident.
It's a little ironic that he was in a car accident, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what we think of, that literally did almost kill him. This was a fairly minor accident.
Well, since he wasn't hurt, let's make fun of him. What kind of an idiot smashes up a $2 million car 5 minutes after?
It's not clear if he was the one that caused the accident or a lady in a Honda SUV. But Tracy was not happy. It was a convertible. This Bugatti was a convertible. And his car was sideswiped. He couldn't get out of the driver's side door. So he had to stand up in the convertible, step over the passenger seat, get out of the other side where he cursed out the other lady, calling a few names. Trying to figure out because he literally was not out of the Bugatti showroom for 10 minutes before this happened, dropping $2.1 million on a brand new car.
Yeah, that's not a great day. What happens when you call insurance after that?
Who knows if the insurance even, you know, was, I hope that he took care of the insurance while I was still in the showroom.
Yeah, that would be
right?
bad. That would be bad.
That's why I drive a Geo Prism.
All right, James Bond in the news.
Remember we told you a week or so ago that Daniel Craig is going to have surgery on his ankle because of an accident that he was in while they're filming the new James Bond movie, which doesn't even have a name yet. Yesterday, they're doing more filming on something that was called a controlled explosion, you know, one of these special effects that they do.
Like the ones we do here on the show.
Like the ones that we do to spice up the show a little bit so you don't realize how boring it is.
Why don't those words go together? Controlled explosion.
Right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound great.
Right? Isn't that weird?
Explosion is going to explode.
You're right. No, you're 1,000% right.
Normally, they know exactly what's going to happen, but in this case, it did not. Something misfired. One of the crew members was injured and hospitalized. He's okay, but still, somebody was injured.
Is Daniel Craig back on set? Because maybe they're trying to kill him.
No, Daniel Craig is not back on set.
He makes a lot of money. I mean, they may be trying to take him out.
He is. He won't be back for a while. This movie, they don't even have a name for this movie yet, number one.
How about Cursed?
This movie is cursed. They've now gone through two directors on this movie. And two production people as well. It's really weird, like everything that's happening to this movie.
Robert Downey Jr. back in the news. Here's a guy that is living the life, and my experience with him has always been good. Good guy, a multi-bazillionaire, and a really great actor, and a fun dude. I couldn't be happier for him.
Yeah, life is great for him. I mean, if you're familiar at all with the Avengers or Iron Man series, he played that role to a T, and in real life now, yesterday especially, was acting like the benevolent Tony Stark. He was a keynote speaker at Amazon's Mars conference that was taking place in Las Vegas, and he announced that he's launching a new organization called the Footprint Coalition that he says will clean up the environment within 10 years, completely clean up the environment using technology using what does he call? What does
Swiffers.
He say here?
Probably Swiffers.
Robotics, and nanotechnology.
Swiffers.
And Swiffers. And those little round things that move around by themselves. I forget what those are.
What do we call those?
Roomba.
Roomba.
Yeah. No. Robotics and nanotechnology to clean up the world within 10 years. This new organization.
Well,
doesn't that sound? That sounds like Tony Stark.
It sounds ridiculous, exactly. And I hope he's right.
Me too.
Jussie Smollett's back. When is Jussie Smollett going to get the memo that we just want him to go away?
Well, I think he may have gotten it last night. There were some stories that popped up last night that the writers for Empire, who are working on what will be their final season, were trying to figure out ways to work in Jussie Smollett into the show. About a half an hour after those stories came out, tweets came out from the show's co-creator, Lee Daniels, who said that he wanted to make it very clear Jussie Smollett will not be returning to Empire. This is the first time that anybody from that show has publicly acknowledged that Smollett will definitely not be back on the series. So he is done.
He's doing a hilarious reality show any minute now about people that fake crimes. It's going to be fantastic. You know, Big Shot boss Sandberg has joined us in studio for this segment.
We love the Sandberg.
Yeah. How's your first few days of being a Big Shot boss?
It's going great. I'm saying no a lot.
Sure, you're living
a lot of martinis. Yeah. A lot of martini lunches.
A lot of martinis.
Yeah.
Dean, that life on the other side is wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Had her heels up on the desk, yelling at somebody when I walked by her office. And you want to be here because you heard there's a big announcement about a show you love.
I did. My dad broke it to me. He saw it on your newscast earlier today, Dean.
An 80s TV show is about
so
to be rebooted.
I am so excited. This one is worth doing.
Punky Brewster is coming back.
That's excellent.
Punky Brewster coming back. But listen to how they're going to do this.
It's so good. Go ahead.
Wait, listen here. Listen.
I know.
Or just a little unkind. Oh, no.
Yeah, you know the words.
Seems it can't be sure.
Wow.
This was a pivotal TV show for a lot of people of a certain age.
Right.
I'm of those people.
Yeah.
I'm of a certain age.
Ran on NBC from 84 to 88, but has been in reruns. And the little girl, 8 years old at the time, Soleil Moon Frye is her name, now is 42 years old. She will return. The premise of what they're saying so far is that will be an adult Punky Brewster, same person, who is now a single mother of three, from which hilarity will ensue.
See, now, I've heard this the concept ripped. I think this is pretty smart.
Oh, I think it's
because
great.
It's taking in the people like Sandberg, who are now grown-ups, and you'll have a curiosity to tune in. And if they transition this into grown-up Punky Brewster, why wouldn't it work?
Yep.
Yeah, I think my sister and I were members of the Punky Brewster fan club.
Wow.
We had Soleil Moon Frye signed headshots sent to us.
Might be a good time for Sandberg. Might be a good time for her to stop talking.
Yeah. Well, I was 8 to 10, you know, or 8 to 11 when they had that show. But I was like, I want to be...
Too much information.
I want to be adopted by an older guy and live with him and have a cool treehouse.
A little girl who was the premise. A little girl abandoned at a Chicago shopping center.
And
taken in by this old guy.
Adopted legally.
Well, I think fostered a child, right?
Yeah,
and nothing bad happened. Why would it?
Yeah.
What roll of the dice that is. Dave, do you remember when you started the Woodrow Wilson fan club?
Okay. Listen, that was in a past life, Steve.
Yes, I'm sorry.
But wasn't that not family ties? I mean, that was Punky Brewster?
Punky Brewster.
Punky Brewster.
I don't remember.
She wore the pigtails, mismatched clothing.
Adorable.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
I never ever watched that show. Did you, Steve? Never.
Never. I didn't.
No.
They were kind of. It was adorable, but also the show kind of famous for what everyone began to spoof very special episodes.
Right.
They would tackle hard subjects.
Where they would tackle like drugs and peer pressure.
Right.
And there's one really famous episode where they dealt with the space shuttle disaster.
Oh, no, sure. Yeah. Well, puberty too. I think puberty
was
the
Jupiter. Special episode. Yeah, and, you know, because she only had, he's an older man, and, you know, she's a girl. And
hello. This is where it's getting
has girl stuff going on. Yeah. It's a great show. It's a great show. I'm very excited, so.
And famously, Andy Gibb appeared on the show twice.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Twice.
You don't want to go back, by the way, and look at some of the concepts of stuff that we all loved. You go back to the Future. Okay. He ends up trying to date his mom, and he hangs out with a crazy old guy at a mall. You know, it's just some of these concepts are bizarre.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Hey, thanks for being you.
Nice to hear Sandberg on the show.
Well, yeah. You going to join me tomorrow at a Jared Payton thing?
I will be at Jared's Payton thing, but I'm there as the boss.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Hovering over the show.
Got a break!
Sounded threatening.
I know.
It is.
I wanted it to, Dean. It's going to be chaotic, and people are going to have to listen.
I'm busy too, Steve.
Yeah, everyone's frightened. Thank you, Dean. We're coming back to the headlines in a moment on 720 WGN.
What's going to be? Guess we'll just wait.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The president is still overseas. He's supposed to call any minute now. And still to come on the program after 9 o'clock, Lucas Giolito, maybe the hottest pitcher in baseball.
Yep.
And Justin Kaufman and Pete Zimmerman will be on plugging one of their shows. And Pete got another freaky drop-off last night at his house.
Eggplant?
Eggplant Plus, eggplant, coffee beans, you name it. He had like a whole Whole Foods was dropped off at his house. Pardon me, Dave.
Later, loser.
You better take this.
Later, loser.
Custom ringtone from the president. Well, all the way from the UK. Good morning, President Trump. How are you this morning?
Ready to come home already, Cochran. So boring here. They have nothing to watch on TV. Just four channels. Four channels. And no subtitles for these horrible accents. Very hard to understand. I will tell you, they murder our American language. They really do.
Actually, it's called English for a reason. But well, look, you were in London for 3 days, sir. What was that reception like? We've seen photos of protesters.
Fake news, Cochran. That's fake news. Those are just spectators booing some soccer team like Manchester or Arsenal or Manchester's Arsenal, Liverpool's, somebody's Arsenal. That's all I know.
Mm-hmm. Paying attention. Well, they're holding up signs with your name on them.
You know what? There's a lot of soccer players named Trump. I'm part Scottish, you know.
I don't think that's true.
The crowds were very positive towards me. But as a precaution, I had my security detail shoot down that baby blimp balloon that looks like Carrot Top.
Yeah, you're saying it doesn't look like you at all?
Not at all.
No, of course not.
No way.
What about the state visit with the Queen? Was that a good time?
You know, she's the same queen that I remember from our last visit. A pint-sized geriatric woman in a flower-printed housecoat and hat who smells like Vicks Vapor Rub.
She really does. I'm guessing she's never been described that way. You know, she's 93.
You know, she is a tremendous ruler, you know, especially at her age. And we learned a lot from each other. She taught me which fork I'm supposed to use for the dinner salad, and I taught her which bucket to order at KFC.
That's right.
She taught me how to bow properly, and I taught her how to shake someone's hand like you're struggling with a pole start lawnmower.
Oh, you didn't rip her arm off, did you?
I was gentle. I was very gentle.
And you got a special gift from the Queen, I heard?
Yes. Oh, this was nice. She gifted me a first edition of Winston Churchill's book on World War II. Mm-hmm. Incredible book. And as a nice gesture in turn, I autographed the inside cover and gave it right back to her. You're welcome, Queen. She's going to get a lot of money for that on eBay now. Believe me.
You understand the gift. And then you met the royals. The whole family got to come and experience Buckingham Palace. How about that?
Yes, it was very special. You know, at the state dinner, I was surrounded by my beautiful children and my son, Eric. Now, seriously, he has been a little annoying on this trip, I will tell you. He keeps pointing at things and saying, "Hey, I saw that in Mr. Bean," or "Hey, that's Big Ben over there," while pointing at a clock that is clearly not Big Ben. You know, in all fairness, at least he's not trying to tickle the red soldier guy standing guard with the black fuzzy hat like he did last time.
No, and tell him, too, his Fitbit's not Big Ben. I saw him pointing at his wrist.
He's got a lot of problems.
All right, now,
not his first one.
Did you have tea with Prince Charles and Camilla?
You know what? I did. The Duke and Duchess of Cornwall was fantastic. And you got to love Charles. You know, he didn't seem to mind that I used his ears as coat hooks.
After
we finished our scones, you know, Charles and I played fetch with Camilla. Oh, impressive woman. She can do it all, really. Shake hands, roll over, and even wake Charles up from a nap when he has low blood sugar.
Yes.
Very well trained.
Just so wrong. Sir, just while I have you on, I want to clear the air once and for all. Did you or did you not call Prince Harry's wife, Meghan Markle, nasty?
Okay, look, the whole thing with his wife, Megan, was totally blown out of proportion, okay? Despite the fact that I said in a recorded interview that she was nasty, and then I said I never said it. I can see how people might think that I called her that, but when that interview was translated from British to American, a lot of that conversation had been digitally altered by the fake news media. Bottom line is, just because you heard it come out of my mouth doesn't mean I said it, Cochran.
Just like any other day. Listen, I saw you had one last meeting with the outgoing Prime Minister, Theresa May. Yeah, you going to miss her?
You know, I really am going to miss her. Prime Minister May always made me laugh. Well, actually, her teeth made me laugh, you know, because British teeth are so funny. They really are. It's a shame what happened to her with the whole Brexit deal over there.
Well, the UK's got a lot of problems, right?
Oh, not sure if you knew this, but Brexit actually has several different meanings.
Well, I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, in the first definition, Brexit is a delicious harvest wheat cracker that you have with English cheeses during high tea.
All right.
Second definition is a soothing ointment that helps treat many cases of moderate to severe hemorrhoidal flare-ups. And it's also the traditional way a guy with a hair lip from Liverpool would pronounce breakfast.
All right. Well, all of those seem possible.
Little known fact.
We saw you paid a visit to a church this past weekend, and the thing everybody made a big deal about was your slicked back hair. And weren't you wearing golf shoes, too? I mean, you going to do this now as a new look?
Yes, I'm glad you noticed that, Cochran. I might go with it. Completely slicked back, wet hair, and golf shoes. It's my I just climbed out of a water hazard on the 15th hole, and I never took a mulligan look. You like it, don't you?
I do, actually, yeah.
Dave's smiling, isn't he?
Yes, I am.
And by using half the amount of hairspray and spackling compound, I think we can save taxpayers like $1 to $2 million. Let's see Sleepy Joe hair plugs do that.
Oh, he changed his name. Well, listen, finally, sir, you've asked people to boycott AT&T since the parent company of CNN is AT&T. That's the network you hate, of course. Do you think it'll bring about changes, and what changes do you want to be made?
Well, obviously, you know, CNN needs to cut it out with the fake news. All these stories they run about me colluding with Russia, or me interfering with the investigation, you know, or them reading word-for-word tweets I really did write is totally fake news. They need to run real news stories like, this just in, Trump creates 10 million new jobs, or breaking news, Trump is the world's strongest man and incredibly handsome as well. He's so great. You know, news stories like that, which are very, very real. And they just need to dry-shave Wolf Blitzer completely on the air.
I didn't see the last part coming, but basically what you're describing is to only say nice things about you. So I guess I got to leave it there, but I appreciate you calling. Thanks for calling and not calling collect.
Well, we're billing the station for this, believe me. Later, loser.
Goodbye,
President Trump.
He's just, well, he's the president. For now.
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I would say you could call in sick now. I mean, when we got here this morning, it was raining.
Yeah, now it's nice and sunny.
It's supposed to be beautiful all day now. So, you know, call in with rickets or scurvy or something. And if you're already at work, just, you know, maybe say that whatever you have is infectious and you're not sure what it is.
I don't know. I'd save it because it could still rain a little today and it's going to get really cool later on this afternoon.
Yeah, Tim McGill said there is a chance. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of rain or cool?
Thunderstorms.
And then turning sharply, sharply colder.
What time is that going to happen?
I'm going to guess like 3:02.
The ninth hole.
Both of your translations are accurate and annoying. I got a nice note from a regular listener.
I'm not feeling very good, man.
Oh, you're not?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
just,
you should.
It just started. Yeah.
Well, thank goodness we only have an hour left in the show.
Joe, you look peaked, man.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go.
Two words, tough it out. Tough it would be one word. Got a nice note here from one of our regular listeners, Irene Salzman. She sent me a story about a veteran. You know, again, we're on D-Day Eve here. And it's the story of how a vet's roll jacket had been given a Goodwill by accident. And this is for Ronald Russell, who died recently, a vet, and the jacket meant a lot to him. The story is in the Gazette. I don't know which newspaper this is. I'd like to give you guys credit. Oh, in Janesville, Wisconsin. So if you're in that part of the country, you could pick up the full story. At any rate, The vet we're speaking of, Mr. Russell, had Parkinson's. An 81-year-old didn't think he could manage a four-day trip on the vet's roll, annual event. They visit a memorial in D.C. and the vet's roll journey. So when he did go, the jacket meant a lot to him. And fortunately, through a series of events, he was able to get it back. So it's a cool story. And again, that's the Gazette of Janesville. And thank you, Irene, for listening, for sending that our way. It's 8:58. The Steve Cochran Show continues with the news from Steve in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio,
this is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
You know, Dustin Kaufman and Pete Zimmerman have heard more cool music than you and I would even remember, know, or be able to find. Wouldn't it be great if they had a show coming up that specialized in all of that?
I can't imagine that's happening.
Well, turns out it is.
No.
Yeah, let's go live now to Justin Kaufman, and good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. You miss getting up?
So much.
Justin
Kaufman. How are you guys doing, man? It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. We're doing fine. Yeah. You're doing a great job with Extension 720. Noticed that, Dave, I don't know how often you get a chance to hear Extension 720. A couple of new things. We're doing a Primal Scream Therapy segment, which I didn't see coming.
That's right. It's a lot of tonal screaming.
Yeah.
It's a lot of melody. It's melodic screaming.
People don't know how to break through in this business. Sometimes you just have to scream. That's all I'm saying.
That's right. I learned that from you, Steve.
That's right. Mostly off the air.
Right.
All right. So what is this big music show?
So we decided that the engineers at WGN just weren't working hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Bob Ferguson and Bill Murdoch and Jim Holland, those guys. And we decided we had seven or eight bands come through in the last week or so. And we decided, you know what, Chicago's got street festivals. This is the beginning of the summer music festival season. And so Extension 720 is going to do our own music festival tonight, if you will. So we tonight are foregoing sort of talk and doing live music that we've recorded and some that will be live in studio. That is really the first ever Extension 720 Chicago music showcase.
I think it's great. What was the song we just heard coming back from the break?
That's Mary Lane. She's a Chicago blues legend. She is 84 years. She's going to be 84 years old next week. Yeah, she's going to be at the Blues Fest this weekend, and she came to Chicago in the 50s. She's a West Side blues artist. She sang with Howlin' Wolf and Junior Wells and other great Chicago blues artists. And you know what? She, for whatever reason, she didn't get the recognition of the Coco Taylors and some of the other queens of Chicago blues. And she put out her first record in 20 years just last week.
Come on, and last week?
Yeah. Yeah, and she's 84 years old. She doesn't travel. That's one of the issues. I was trying to figure out why. And, you know, if you want to be a blues celebrity superstar, the big deal is you got to go to Europe. It's unfortunate that the blues has died in America in the way that it doesn't have as much support. There's no radio stations. There's not a lot of clubs anymore. But in Europe, it's thriving. But Mary, she doesn't travel. Which is ironic because the name of her new album is Traveling Woman.
At 84, she probably doesn't feel like it.
She doesn't feel like it, but she's very upfront about it. She's like, I don't feel like it. She said that. So there is some things, and when I ask her, you know, just about why she thinks it didn't necessarily happen for her like it did for some others, her whole thing is she didn't really want to kowtow or change her sound or do anything that would be not Mary Lane. And that's what she's going with. And she's really, really supported, and she's really lauded here in Chicago. But outside of Chicago, a lot of people don't know her music. And she's awesome, and the band is awesome. There were all these great Chicago blues guys that came in. It's really great. And she played five or six songs for us, because she just kept going.
Your partner in crime, Pete Zimmerman, standing by as well. And by the way, Pete's had another odd vegetable and assortment drop. We'll get to that in a second. Pete, where do you find all these bands?
I just hit up all the blues clubs.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that, because if you've never seen Pete, when you look at Pete, you think, oh, yeah, that guy's got soul. That guy's got the blues as part of his DNA. I see that. Is Pete with us, or do we have, like, the worst cell site ever going on here?
Hello?
Let me put you on hold for a second, Pete. I thought Pete's segment of this went really well. But we'll get back to Pete in just a second, because I'm for whatever reason, he's in a terrible cell set. All right, so you're going to feature these bands tonight.
Yeah, and there's another band. There's a cool band that's, yeah, there's all sorts of styles. That's what we wanted to do. We didn't want to do just a rock, you know, or just blues. There's we're going to have live. We're going to do bagpipes and drums. There's another band that is a Latin bluegrass band called Che Apalache, which they're from Buenos Aires. But the guy who, an American from North Carolina, he went down there to live, and he didn't have any money, so he started teaching banjo lessons. And so now he's got this band of all these Spanish-speaking, and no one speaks English, but they all play, like, country bluegrass.
So like a Steve Martin kind of sound, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Exact same thing. And they're great, but you're like, this is not there. There's no banjo in Argentinian culture.
Really?
There's no old rhythm section, you know, or the old history of the banjo. It just doesn't exist. So these guys just figured it out and started playing.
Well, I mean, they sound like fun. Let me go back to Pete now and see if we can actually hear him, because that's an important part of the show. All right, so,
sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault. It's clearly technology. So, Pete, before we get to the vegetable drop, what else do you want to add about tonight's big music show?
We were kind of discussing the name, like, what should we call it? And, you know, Justin, you know, with the Chicago Music Showcase, I think is good. But to piggyback off Justin, I want to say that really we should name it Annoying the Engineer since 2015.
There's a good subtitle. Now, you know what I wonder about? Did you guys annoy any other tenants, or were they out of the office at that point?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Usually when like we're in the performance studio and Marlene comes back there, I know it's a bad time.
Don't mess with the Walk of Famer.
Complained.
This is absolutely true. We're on the 18th floor at 303 East Wacker. The corporate offices for Tribune Media are on the 17th floor, one floor below us. They don't even know us. They have complained. Now, keep in mind, think about this now. This is Tribune Media. They have complained when we've made too much noise up here. We're making money for them, and they're telling us to quiet down.
Yeah, I would think Larry and the company down there, they would be like, whatever meeting they're having, they'd be able to point to, see the brilliance that we've created. The content is happening right above us.
Yeah. Why are we the kids who won't quiet down? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
All right. Now, before you guys go, this is tonight at what time?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock tonight, and why Chicago music is so great is a kickoff to the summer festival season, and a first time, and it won't be the last time, I'm sure. It extends at 7:20, a Chicago music show. Now, before you guys go, Pete, what happened?
Well, last night I got home from work at around 7 or so, and we noticed another eggplant. On the other side of the tree that's outside of our house, and upon a further investigation, as we came closer, we realized it was an eggplant and a turnip on top of a bed of black beans.
It's like opening to a joke. They all walk into a bar. For those of you not knowing what we're talking about, Pete's home has been beset with eggplant drops for, what do we determine, Pete, a year?
Yeah, it's been over a year, I think. Yeah.
And Justin, when you were doing this show, we tried to get to the bottom of this. We have no idea, do we?
We don't, but I have promised a 3-hour investigative report show. There will be one this summer that is getting to the bottom of the eggplant drop, a whole extension 720.
Did this eggplant have the same Anarchy A looking etching in it?
All markings are the same. Yeah, they're very consistent.
So what's the combination of the... There's never been a turnip before, right?
Well, you know, my wife is in a running group, and they're called the Glen Glens, and they are obsessed with this now, and they normally just out marathon cheaters, but now that the tight time thing is starting, they're on the case. And yesterday they came up with it was like some sort of heathen feast like on June 4th, there's a heathen feast where somebody gives you an offering of some sort. So,
well, anytime you can hear the word heathen in combination with your own personal property, your home, that's a good thing. That must make you really comfortable.
But what was the last solution we did? I don't remember. Did we ever do the camera? We did do something.
The camera, but the camera's there. Pete was given a stunt camera, like a camera that engineer Bill wanted to get out of his office.
Oh, that's right.
It tapes like 6 minutes, re-records everything over the 6 minutes, and you never catch anybody. All right, so listen, we continue to be worried about you. We don't know what the hell's going on. People keep dropping off Whole Foods produce sections in your front lawn. We don't know why. It's just bizarre. And Justin, you'll let us know when you decide to do the full investigative report, if Pete's even alive at that point.
I still think it's Wiccan. I think it's some Wiccan thing. Maybe that's in the same family as the heathen family, but, I'll figure it out.
You know what I got to say, though, Pete? Not great for resale value. Nah, I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to explain this to the realtor.
What are you talking about? He gets a full dinner. There's food attached to the house.
Yeah, on the lawn.
Yeah. I have not checked Zillow in a couple of years. So.
I don't know. And by the way, we're not making any of this up, including the music show tonight, 7 o'clock. All right, my friends, thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, everybody.
See you.
Pete Zimmerman, Justin Kaufman tonight.
Heard Justin yesterday sitting in for John, and once again, I know you'll be shocked by this, Steve, touting his leadership skills managing the WGN softball team in the media league.
It started already, huh?
How are they doing?
Well, they had just won 7-6.
Opening game?
I think it was their second. I think they lost their first game, but I want to say he wasn't there. But he still feels like he's the guy. He's got to go.
Isn't he doing his 16-inch softball nonsense again? That fake sport, 16-inch softball?
Well, that's what it was.
That's what they...
Be careful, because like our boss plays on that team.
Couldn't care less. It's fake. fake sport. And I used to love to play station softball. Mm-hmm. I used to love it. I'm tired now. I'm just tired.
Why? What would stop you from going? I mean, sometimes they'll get the game started before 9 o'clock.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, when I was on the air in another city at another time, I was probably late 20s. I was doing a morning show, and I played in a league where there were three games a week, played in all three, and they're all night games.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the night games started at 10 o'clock. Because, you had field issues and stuff. Sure. They never started before 7.
Right. My son's in a league, and his game last week, 10 o'clock. He had a game.
Yeah, and, I didn't even think about it. I mean, I'd go, I'd come back, I'd sleep for 2 hours, get up and do the show. What's wrong with me? This is why I look like this at 29. For those of you watching on CLTV, doing the morning show takes its toll, I'm just here to tell you. We have still to come on this program, Lucas Giolito from your Chicago White Sox. Coming up in about 12 minutes, next White Sox game.
Next White Sox game will start in, 2 hours and about 45 seconds.
Why 11:30? Where are they?
They're in Washington.
Oh.
So it's a 1:05 p.m. Eastern time first pitch.
Wednesday businessman special.
Yeah, one of those, getaway mm-hmm. day. And so it's just a two-game set, and then the Nationals come here next week for two games.
Okay.
So
all right. Giolito on his run, being the best pitcher in baseball right now, coming up as we continue on CLTV at 720 WGN. I fought the Lord, the Lord won. I fought the Lord, the Lord won. There's a story this morning that Viv has that I think is interesting because it could be coming here. Washington, D.C., you're going to be able to, sooner than later, give a parking ticket to somebody else and not be a cop. In other words, I could give you a parking ticket, you give me one.
Correct.
That's fantastic.
Now, here's the obvious questions that come to mind. How do you avoid violence? How do you know I'm not the problem? Yeah. What sort of level of honesty do you have? Do you have to take a picture of how the person is parked?
I'm totally on board with it. I, there's a fire hydrant that's right in front of my house, and people park in front of the fire hydrant there all the time.
Shouldn't it be old school? Shouldn't you have like a book of tickets that you hand write, and then you have the enjoyment of physically putting it under their windshield wiper so they can see it?
Yeah, and if I could a hat and a badge on top of it, that would be the greatest.
Viv sent me a picture yesterday of somebody parked, like, was it in front of a hydrant? She's coming in here because I want her to tell the story. Was it somebody parked in front of a hydrant at your house? Because they're clearly in the yellow no parking zone.
Yeah.
So was it a fire hydrant?
Yeah, it was a fire hydrant in front of my house.
So if Chicago had that app, that law, that thing now, you could have had those people in jail by now.
That's right.
Would have been fantastic. Dave, you got something else you want as a law where we could just start arresting people?
Well, a lot of it's traffic related, so I don't want to come off as
texting.
Texting
while walking.
Well, here's one. Okay, the express lanes on the Kennedy. I've talked about this a lot.
This is a big deal.
Okay, Mary, back me up on this, will you? Mm-hmm. When they're outbound, I know that Sandberg would if she were in here, but when they're outbound, it is clearly the right lane is to exit towards O'Hare.
Mm-hmm.
The left lane is for through traffic to Milwaukee.
Keep going.
So people get into the left lane to try to sneak around the cars lined up to get off in the right lane and head towards O'Hare, which ends up slowing down both lanes.
Yeah.
Where if you just stayed in your lane, then you're not inconveniencing all your fellow motorists.
You are a selfish creep when you do that. That's what you're saying, Dave, and I agree with you.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you are ready to have that app, Dave.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Viv. I'm there.
The texting when you're walking across the street, I think that should be ticketable. There are some places that are trying to make a law for that right now.
Walking?
Walking across the street with your face down while you're texting. Stop it. You're crossing traffic. Since you were a little kid, what happened? Your mom, your whoever would say, pay attention. We're in traffic. Or, you know what? Here's the deal. If you're not going to do that, if you want to look down and text, then you have to have someone hold your hand as you cross the street. And
but then
we
you can
hire
text.
People to hold your hand.
You well, can't text point.
That. You know where I see that a lot? Is in our lobby, where people are texting and then they walk into that turnstile.
Yeah. Yep. Or they almost walk into you.
Yeah.
So I want that to stop. We'll continue this. We'll figure it out.
I feel better. Thanks, Steve.
I have a list of questions James Holzhauer got wrong from Jeopardy. You want to try a couple of these?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, that's fun.
2016 interview with this Batman actor found him looking sad. The internet then made him the meme we deserve.
Is that the question?
Yeah, well, that's the answer. You have to come up with the question.
Oh.
It's Jeopardy. It's in the category Don't Tread on Meme for $400. Again, 2016. And by the way, you don't get a reread on the show.
No.
2016 interview with this Batman actor found him looking sad. The internet then made him the meme we deserve.
I don't know. Who's Adam West?
Who is who?
Adam West.
Who is Christian Bale? Was Holzhauer's answer? Nope. Correct answer, who is Ben Affleck?
That's what I was going to say that, but I didn't want to steal Mary's thunder.
He was the worst Batman.
Oh, so sad that you people don't know this.
I don't know any of them.
By the way, I'll ruin...
sit on that show and, ugh.
In Steve Cochran show tradition, I'll ruin the other answers later. But we'll come back, take a break. We'll come back. Lucas Giolito will join us on the White Sox next on 720 WGN.
Giolito, the pitch. Swing and a miss on a changeup on the outside corner, and he gets Martin and strands Allen at second base.
One ball, two strikes, two down, seventh inning, and the 1-2. Strike three, call, got him looking. Nine strikeouts, he's going to the dugout.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the American League Pitcher of the Month for May. Nobody better in baseball right now. Why not keep it going? It's Lucas Giolito. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
What happened to you? You turned it on like that switch went on. Like that switch went on and suddenly you're unhittable.
I don't know. I'm just feeling pretty good right now.
So there was no moment where you went, oh, yeah, that's it. It just is starting to happen.
Yeah, I started to feel that a bit in the off season actually, when I was getting into my flat grounds and bullpens, throwing the ball just felt right. Felt like I was making the right adjustments, and then I carried that into the season.
So, pitching coach Don Cooper, have you gotten better since you listened to him more or less?
Definitely more. But the thing with Coop is that it's less about like listening to it's an ongoing conversation. He's very frank, very honest. We're able to discuss things at a good level always, and so working with him is always a pleasure.
Just some of the numbers, Steve, on Lucas. Tied for third in the American League in ERA, second in WHIP, first in complete games. And I've heard you talk about this, that game against Toronto when the rain was coming down in the fifth inning, that has had a residual effect for you because you knew you needed to get three quick outs that inning. You got it, ended up being an official game, and you won a rain-shortened game. How has that affected you since that start?
Yeah, that's kind of where I found the rhythm that I want to be pitching at. Really quick tempo, get the ball, get back on the mound, fire the next one. It was actually McCann who, after that inning, was like, "Hey, like that tempo was great. You know, we should try and do that more often." And so you just went from there. And that's pretty much the tempo that I strive for when I go out there.
You a golfer?
Yeah, on occasion.
The key to playing golf well is repetitive motion. To find a swing that works and to be able to repeat it again and again and again.
Exactly.
The key to being a great pitcher is to find that groove, find that release point, and be able to repeat it again and again and again. How much?
Exactly,
you're a smart guy. How much do you have to stay out of your own head to make that work?
Completely. For me, if I find a good rhythm early on, then I try and ride that out, and you just want to turn the brain off at that point, and you just execute pitch after pitch.
It's one of the worst things you can do is listen to the voices in your head. Unless one of the voices is Illinois Golf Hall of Famer Emil Esposito.
Yeah, then you want to listen
in your
to
head,
him, yes.
It's fine. It's inside, Lucas. You wouldn't know. Super Joe is here. Now, Super Joe, Lucas Giolito, is probably the number one White Sox fan in the building. And on Sunday, he had the honor of bringing out the lineup card. And I don't think you guys win without him. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. He's...
You've heard nothing
talking about...
Not your Super Joe. We're talking about our Super Joe.
Okay, then I'm not totally positive. I was a little confused at first because I thought you were talking about
I'm talking about Super Joe Romano, not McHugh. He brought out the lineup card. Nobody got a paper cut, and you guys won. Super Joe, you got a question?
I sure do. Lucas, so much credit has been given to catcher James McCann and what he's done for the pitching staff. What is James like outside of the game atmosphere? I saw him in the dugout doing a crazy dance. Like, is he all fun and games, or is he more serious?
It depends on the situation, but yeah, he's just as much fun and games as you guys see on the field. You know, I call him our field general, like the serious side. He's on top of everybody. He's holding guys accountable, but at the same time, he's a goofball just like the rest of us. He's not afraid to dance and mess around on the bus and things like that, so he keeps it loose.
What's the most annoying drill you have to go through with? Because when I see you guys doing the towel drill, I got to think, oh, the pitcher hates this. He's just doing this to get the coach off his back.
For me, the towel drills, like anything monotonous like that,
right.
It can be boring. But for me, I kind of found a nice combination of drills and exercises that work for me, and I can keep it pretty brief, especially with how long the season is. You don't want to be overworking, just like you don't want to be underworking.
Are you superstitious?
Not really.
I wouldn't change a thing you're doing right now, including your clothes.
Yeah, there's a few things I like to keep. I keep the same, and mostly it's routine, like lifting schedule, running schedule, all my drills and everything, all that stuff. I like to keep that on a nice 5-day routine.
You mentioned James. Yeah, I think the term used was goofball, but there does seem to be a real high fun quotient on this team that's visible to those of us who aren't in the dugout that maybe we didn't see last year. Is that a fair statement that there's just a more fun vibe with this team this year?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that, I can speak for myself and maybe a few others on the team. When you're not performing well, it's harder to have fun because you feel like you're not living up to the standard you're setting for yourself and your teammates are setting for you, et cetera. So it's harder to have fun when you're putting that pressure on yourself to perform better. What I kind of realize with my own career is if I just relax and have fun, then I'm going to perform better. So why not just take that first step and you know, it's a game. Have fun with it and go from there.
That's a great attitude. And also I personally appreciate the fact about how good you are with the media. And I didn't realize why until I heard that you come from a family of actors. Like everybody in your family is an actor other than you, right? Actor, writer, business.
Yeah, in the business. And now, yeah, my little brother's even going down that route. He's in acting school right now.
So here's the rundown of just a few here. Your dad did As the World Turns, Hunter, Who's the Boss, Jake and the Fat Man, Twin Peaks. Your mom's done just about everything. Hill Street Blues the way through Boston Legal and Without a Trace. Your brother Mark, co-creator of Twin Peaks. He's got the Twin Peaks money. And your brother Scott, a writer, worked on Echo and Flipper and Andromeda. And your grandfather, you probably get the most recognition from your grandfather. Who did he play on Seinfeld?
Henry Ross. So that was
Susan's dad.
Yeah, or like something like that.
Yeah, Susan, the woman that was going to marry George, right? She got the bad envelopes.
That's it. Yes, George. Yeah. George's fiance's dad.
So you just had no interest in this kind of show. You're in show business, but you had no interest in that show business.
Yeah, I didn't really get the acting bug. For me, like being on stage and trying to remember lines in front of people is like terrifying and not fun. Mm-hmm. But playing baseball in front of thousands of people is really fun. So I don't know. I just didn't get it on that side.
What's it like at Thanksgiving for you? Everybody's sitting around talking about auditions and parts. You going, hey, you guys see my fastballs moving nicely?
Yeah, they still get pretty excited about the sports stuff. You know how it is, like people in sports, like they want to be actors and musicians, and the actors and musicians want to be athletes. So, you know, it goes both ways.
I'll let you go on this. Lucas Giolito, AL Pitcher of the Month for May, and just crushing it with the White Sox. You want to be on the All-Star team?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't see how he misses at this point. If he's not on the All-Star team, the fix is in, and we will expose them.
There's still time. I gotta stay on top of my game for sure.
What's he got? Three starts now? Three starts, four starts left probably now in the All-Star game?
Second week of July?
Yeah, maybe five. Yeah. Listen, man, just keep it going. Keep it going and keep having fun. We love watching you. And, you know, like you said, it's just a game. Treat it like that and it's probably going to go great.
Yeah, exactly. Just have fun with it.
All right, thanks for being on, Lucas.
Thanks, Lucas.
Appreciate it, guys. No problem.
And all the White Sox baseball you want to hear is here because we have every White Sox game, every pitch of every inning. Next game in about 12 minutes, you said?
Let's see, it'd be about an hour and 35 minutes from now.
Okay. You cannot believe the amount of training Bill and Wendy have gone into to handle this show today.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It's grueling.
Come back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next on 720 WGN. We're just pretending we're on Jeopardy. It's 9:58, and Bill and Wendy are here for the Express Lane edition of the Bill and Wendy Show, just up to White Sox baseball. Now, how does that work, then? Do you do a longer
stream on WGN Extra? Yeah.
Oh, so you're going on early on the stream.
Yeah, and it's fun there because Bill Leff is unleashed.
We still have to legally call it the bonus hour, even though it's 90 minutes. But
you still cursing up a storm on that?
A lot of swearing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm hearing.
Billy Blue Leff.
Yeah.
That's what we call you on the stream.
That's right.
So what are you doing while you're on for 90 minutes on the regular radio?
We're going to talk to the people at Snopes about what's real and what's not real.
And haven't you heard the president? It's all fake.
Oh, it's all fake.
I need to know if there's an uptick in people checking things out. Now that Ask Jeeves is gone,
you would hope, right?
Where do you go?
You would hope.
Yeah.
I think if you want to know if something's true, you do what all Americans do, and you turn to Google until you find something you agree with, and then you shut your computer off.
Lock it up.
Lock it up.
Lock it up.
Now, you, my friend.
Yes.
You were particularly disappointed in me with the Jeopardy story on Monday.
I was, Steve. Yeah. Yes.
And yesterday, it was revealed that Jeopardy had its highest ratings in 14 years.
That's what Bertrand said.
That's what yes, I
Steve
said
called it.
It was in their interest to get the word out.
And even though I have it in very good authority that Holzhauer's brother said I ruined it for him.
Yes.
Of course, he lives in Naperville. And is a listener and a good guy, been on the show.
Right.
I don't think that those ratings happened without me shooting my mouth off.
You, without a doubt, had a lot to do
with
it.
Wait, did James Holzhauer lose?
Nice going. Now you ruined it for the people that haven't seen it yet.
Oh.
So are you done being mad at me?
No.
Okay.
I'm going to hold a grudge for a while.
Okay. Vanderbilt's the same way.
Yeah.
You guys can team grudge. All right. 90 minutes of Bill and Wendy start right now.